We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Mavs fans, welcome to Pod Maverick After Dark. This is Kirk Henderson and Josh Bow. We're recording live. It is almost 12:30 on Wednesday morning, April 24th. The Dallas Mavericks defeated the Los Angeles Clippers 96-93 to even up the series one apiece. Josh, how you doing?
I'm doing about as good as I can. I think we've both kind of had some personal life coming up right when the playoffs start, I think is just par for the course, but we are here, we are ready, and at least we get to talk about a Mavericks win.
Oh my God. Yeah. There is just nothing as great and as awful as close playoff basketball. I mean, I don't think I could have watched that game with other people around. Because I was so tense. I mean, with 82 games, you kind of get lost in the shuffle. And then the meaningfulness of the playoffs come around. And, you know, it was probably good you and I didn't talk on Monday. Because that game was just so fucking stupid. Where the Mavericks were not prepared. Where, you know, Luka and Kyrie were treating it like it was just some Sunday afternoon game to get started. And, you know, we've talked about this. They during their win streak, they had a tendency to start the games farting around in the first quarter, only to clamp down and shut up the other team. That just never happened against the Clippers. And so to see them come out and play tonight, particularly with Kawhi Leonard getting injected back in the mix, and watch the team pull this out, because this was an awful basketball game, if we're being quite candid. Like, it was 3 yards in a cloud of dust. It was swings. And I mean awful in the best ways, because it was gritty for both teams. There were lots of plays where, you know, you're sitting there going, oh God, could that cost them the game? There's just no real way to explain it to a person who wasn't watching it live, just how gritty and how just fascinating a basketball game that this is, you know. And I'm curious as to know where to start. I really need ESPN's garbage website to stop auto-playing a fucking video every time I click onto their page. Anyways, where do you want to start, man? Where do you want to start? Because I'm all over the place in this one.
Yeah. I mean, it was a crazy game. Do you want to talk about like the fourth quarter, what the Mavericks did, or kind of just, because I know what my overarching theme from this game is. And I think these two games is, and it's the defense. Like, the Mavericks defense is just, I don't know. I mean, it's as good.
It's amazing.
It's as good as the second half of the season was telling us. And you he played enough games that we assumed that this was as good, you know, that this was enough data to tell us this is good defense. But you don't know until the playoffs, because playoff basketball is a different sport. Like, so you see what happens in game one, and I know people were really upset about the defense. I know that they didn't start off well defensively, but the Clippers didn't, you know, they shot well from three, but they still didn't score in the paint. And the Mavericks' defensive MO is, we're going to wall off the paint. You're not going to score at the paint. You're not going to score at the rim. We're going to give you some threes, but we are, they're taking the bet that, you know, you not being able to make any layups is going to outweigh
any layups. I am just befuddled, because there were three Mavericks players near every rim attempt. I mean, guys that we have kind of been killing and been frustrated with for the better, like the rejuvenation of Maxi Kleber on defense, him playing sort of four and help side guy. Yeah, he did play a little bit small ball five tonight at times, but like he's been at his best as a disruptor force, being able to, you know, kind of meet guys and help defense as opposed to being the last line of defense. The Derrick Jones Jr. stuff at point of attack was truly incredible in some possessions tonight. PJ Washington, really, really fascinating defense. I mean, it's just that they're switchable. And then, you know, it's like Luka Doncic playing lockdown defense on Kawhi Leonard on repeated possessions.
Luka and Kyrie combined to have five stocks. Kyrie had three steals. Luka had a steal and a block. Like, they were engaged and locked in defensively as they've been all season.
And honestly, I think the defensive scorekeeping took some things away from Luka in the first quarter, because Luka played some incredible first quarter defense when the game was still really, when we were just getting into the mix of how gross it was. So, I have a lot of complaints about this game.
Let's get to those later.
But no, nothing in specific, but it's just, it's like, or nothing that like caused the game to, but it's just that, like, you look at this box score and it doesn't really compute. They won the battle of the boards. Josh Green had seven rebounds in 14 minutes. Like, what is happening there? Derek Lively, nine rebounds. This is just a really, really impressive team defensive performance. I mean, Kleber with six rebounds is wild to me. That dude never rebounds the basketball, and he had some incredible clutch boards tonight. He
had the game ceiling board, offensive board off a free throw. It was pretty good. Man. I mean, the story to me is the Clippers shot 13 of 28 in the restricted area in game one. Despite the fact that they won, because, you know, I was looking in game one and I was like, okay, they lost defensively. Like, did they get away from what's worked for them, which has been, you know, wall off the paint and we'll give up some threes. And the Clippers only won that game because they made, you know, almost 50% of their threes. Outside of that, they didn't shoot the ball terribly well from any other spot on the floor. You know, they still shot under 50% in the restricted area, which is, you know, that's good number for the Mavericks. That's a bad number for the Clippers. They shot 11 of 20 from the restricted area tonight, 55%, which is still way, way below league average. So we're through two games, and the Clippers are basically shooting like 50% at the rim. That's not good for the Clippers. That's great for the Mavericks. And I know that the Clippers don't rely on a ton of paint points to do what they need to do. You know, they rely on the three ball, but the three ball is variable. Like, we know that. Like, it kind of can come and go. So if the Mavericks keep denying easy paint points like they've had through two games, I just like their chances. Like, I know the Clippers shoot a ton of jumpers. I know that they're comfortable in the mid-range. I know that they're comfortable in some of the areas that the Mavericks are okay giving up. But, like, it's just so, like, you can't be that bad at the rim and still consistently win these games. So, like, you know, unless the Clippers keep shooting kind of like what they shot in game one from three, which I just don't know if it's sustainable, especially if Kawhi Leonard is going to look like this. I don't know. Like, we've watched the Mavericks defense in the playoffs for a couple years now. And outside of the 2022 year, you know, those first 2 years against the Clippers, like, it really felt like smoke and mirrors. Like, they were really trying to gunk up and junk up the game just to have a chance. It didn't feel real. This is real. Like, I'm looking through their lineup and the players that they're playing, like, where are the weak links defensively if Kyrie and Luka are going to lock in like they did tonight? Because PJ and DJ, PJ Washington and Derek Jones Jr. have been great. Gafford didn't play a lot, and that might be something we can talk about later. But Kleba, Lively, those guys have been, like, there's not a lot of exploitable areas like this team used to have before the trade deadline and in previous seasons. So, I don't know. Like, this could have been, you know, if the Mavericks just kind of had their heads on straight for to start the playoffs, this could have been a 2-0. You know, series lead for the Mavericks. So I don't know. They've looked like the most impressive team in this series so far.
You didn't watch near. You didn't suffer in real time through game one.
Right.
Like game one.
I might have thought differently if I watched it live.
Game. So my 8-year-old son is watching the game with me, and like I love him to pieces, but he has a tendency to fill the space with talking. and so he'll be like, Daddy, who's the Mavericks' best player? Like, as the Mavericks score 8 points in the second quarter, and I'm just, my wife was like getting furious with me during that game because I was just so testy. Anyways, it's just so wild because I would like to talk about the offense, but I think like the offense by and large comes down into, and I think we sort of need to discuss that as a whole because outside of you know, and yes, obviously the Mavericks scored 96 points. Kyrie and Luka combined for 55. You know, I want to circle, like, not all of it was gross, but enough of it was gross to where I kind of feel like that's like the Mavericks just hitting shots is going to become a thing that we talk about here in kind of the second half of the podcast where we're talking about what they need to continue to work on. But barring, you know, PJ Washington connecting on two huge threes down the stretch in the corners, no less, was absolutely incredible for me, because he had blown four layups, or at least rim attempts. If you don't want to consider them layups, one, he was fouled by Kyrie or Kawhi. Maxi Kleba hitting two of his three pointers was really just incredibly important to this win. And that's about the offensive highlights that I want to talk about that I thought were good. I mean, I could have this is going to drive some of our fans like crazy, but it's like Luka shot 5 of 14 from three. Not like obviously some real killer shots in that mix, but then also some just possession murdering turnover level bad 3-point shots from Luka, which just hasn't been.
He's been good from three.
Yeah, he's been so good from three. And the threes he's taking are good. They just haven't been going down. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. And it's going to be tough for them to sustain offense if he's not making threes, just with the way the Clippers are going to guard them. And with the way the Mavericks kind of have to play with the lineups they're playing, because this isn't a team that plays a bunch of floor spacers like they did in the previous years. Like, you know, PJ Washington made his threes, but I think the Clippers are still okay with him taking shots. Derek Jones Jr. was 0 for 1 from 3. You're playing a rim runner a lot of the time with either Gafford or Lively. And then, you know, Josh Green was 0 for 2. Exum only played 6 minutes. They don't have a ton of shooters on the floor, especially Tim Hardaway Jr. getting hurt in the first half. He only played 6 minutes. So they're going to, you know, teams are going to dare these other guys to shoot a lot more than maybe teams would have dared the Mavericks to shoot in the past. So Luka's going to have to take some of these threes that you might wince at and be like, oh, I don't know. But it's because, you know, you'd almost rather Luka take that than Derek Jones Jr. take a wide open one from above the wing or something like that. So the floor isn't perfectly spaced for him like I think it was maybe some of the earlier series when the Mavericks had more and more capable shooters. But I mean, the compensation for that is they seem to have the most legitimate defense they've had in a while. And I might even, you know, put that above the 2022 team, which was also really good defensively. Like, just, I don't know, just feels more real. But offensively, like, I thought they tried a couple different things a little bit better, because we talked about this before. We talked about this in Slack. Like, the main thing was the Clippers were like, okay, we're going to let Kyrie and Luka score. They did the thing that happened, that teams did coming out of the All-Star break when the Mavericks lost 5 of 6, where we're going to let Luka and Kyrie get their points and we're going to guard everyone else straight up because, you know, we don't think Derek Jones Jr. can score on us if we give him an advantage, or we don't think Kleba can score on us unless we, you know, send two and give him a wide open shot. So we're going to let Luka and Kyrie work one-on-one, and these other guys aren't going to score. And that kind of was working for most of the game. And then the Clippers started sending two at Luka. Kleba got a couple open threes. PJ got a couple open threes. And it's like, oh, all right, I guess they're gonna start doing that. It was kind of bizarre. But for the most part, if the Clippers are going to guard you one-on-one and not give these role players space, you know, you got to try to drum up some off-ball stuff. I thought they did some okay things early to try that. Like Jones was 4 of 6. I think he attacked some closeouts pretty well. But otherwise, they might have to win these games ugly.
Winning ugly. Okay, we're at about the halfway point in the show here. I'm going to take a moment. Those of you who are here, if you could do, watching the show live, if you could do me a favor, if you could hit the like button on the stream, that'd be really something I'd appreciate. If you would consider subscribing while you're down there, that'd be great. We've gotten some tips already during the show. If that's something you are at all interested in, Josh and I are very grateful. You know, we got Master Fame saying, let's go, we're back up, our defense is stout, Luka really hasn't played his best and the Clippers should be worried, PJ Washington won the game with his corner threes, let's defend home court, Mavs in 5. We got Albert shouting us out saying, too many players with 0 points, all the Clippers scored. Albert, you're not wrong. Juan saying, daycare is expensive, go Mavs. We want to thank you guys for doing that. You know, those tips and that sort of thing are always very appreciative. Josh and I are grateful. You know, while you're, if you're watching the show a little bit later on a watching the video stream at a later date, because it is nearly 1 in the morning, leave us a comment on the video. I read all those. I don't always have the time to respond to them, but I'm doing my best. Everybody listening on the audio stream, if you would consider subscribing, leaving a review, we're very appreciative. Shout out to Bobby for a quick tip there. Very, very appreciative of that, Bobby Chapman. And now we're going to insert some audio ads, and we will be right back. Thanks to those of you who are hanging out.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Okay, this is just it's so like emotionally draining talking about this game at 1 in the morning. I don't want to sound like I'm not excited about this game. It's talking about what the Mavericks did defensively in real time is a little bit difficult. other than to sort of gush at the results. I will say it's worth noting, for as well as the Clippers shot the ball in game one, was almost as bad as some of these guys shot the ball in game two. Kawhi Leonard 0 for 5 from 3. James Harden 2 of 10 from 3. Russell Westbrook 1 of 3, you know, 1 of 3 from distance. And that, you know, Terrence Mann 1 of 3. The Mavericks won by 3. The Clippers, they hit 6 more threes than the Clippers. So there's still honestly some work to do for these Dallas Mavericks. And it's not necessarily a defensive conversation. It's honestly more of an offensive conversation. And you sort of started talking about it a little bit with what the Mavericks were doing. I'm going to be really curious to see what kind of the counter is, like, not to be overly morbid, but I think that if you know, Tim Hardaway's ankle injury is actually severe and he's going to miss a couple of games, I think that takes away one of Kidd's go-to responses to, like, lackadaisical Mavericks offense. And I honestly think it's a good thing, because I, you know, letting Tim bomb from three is not a sustainable offensive plan for, you know, trying to fire up the bench. They have to try to do some other things to get different guys going. You know, Josh Green, we mentioned him before, he played 14 minutes. He was 0 for 2 from the field. Josh Green has basically hit 1-3 since the middle of March. You know, obviously he sprained his ankle and was out for a while, but he's just had kind of a rough offensive go. You know, what can the Mavericks do? Can the Mavericks do anything other than get home and hope these other role players hit some of these easier shots? And you know, just to be quite candid, Luka and Kyrie need to be a shitload more efficient. Like, I'm obviously 55 points. I'm not criticizing as much as I'm saying they need to be more efficient with their shot making, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Luka has to make threes, and that's, like, not a fun conversation, because it's like, well, what can you do to make more threes? And it's like, make more threes. Like, you know, like, he's going to shoot step backs. I mean, he's shot more catch and shoot threes in the regular season than he has at any other point in his NBA career. Yeah. So they could probably do a little bit better job with that. Haven't seen Kyrie run a ton of pick and roll with Luka off the ball in this series. So they could do a little bit more of that. They could do a little bit more with Luka and Kyrie working together. Has Luka or Kyrie screened for each other in this series? Not seen enough of it.
No.
Yeah, they could do a little bit more of that. Like, they did so much good stuff offensively to kind of try to counteract what teams were starting to pick up on. Because if teams are going to stay home on the role players and let your stars go one-on-one, and you can't outscore a team with two players, I mean, sometimes they're that good, but can't do that consistently. So it's like, so what do you do to get these limited role players opportunities if teams are staying home? Well, it's like, use your stars to free them up. You know, Kyrie screening for guys, Luka screening for Derrick Jones Jr. to get a backdoor cut. These are all things that have been happening in the last month that I haven't really seen too much of. I saw a little bit of it in the first quarter, but they kind of got away from it. Another thing that hurts, you know, with Gafford kind of being played off the floor a little bit in the series, you know what, he's barely played.
Gafford, yeah, the center of production.
Minutes. He was kind of a counter because they were running high post offense through him and letting him find cutters. He was averaging 2 assists per game for a good stretch.
Well, he's come out. I mean, Gafford is ultimately the fact that they survived him being ass. I mean, it's just to be candid, like, he's been awful. Like, he was weak in game one and he was sloppy in game two. And I don't know if he can play in this series. That's okay.
Yeah.
It's something they're going to have to figure out, though.
I don't know if the back injury he suffered pretty early on contributed to him only playing 9 minutes. I feel like we got to point that out. But defensively, he's been, you know, he hasn't been the same. I don't think he
This is
has.
A good comment. Jeremy Sennett says Gafford thrives on being able to out-physical his matchup, and he cannot do that with Zubac.
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, he's only got one. I mean, he's basically played 23 minutes. He has one block in 23 minutes, which is not a lot for him. Mm-hmm. He's 1 for 7 from the floor. And considering this is a guy who's had, like, what, 30 streak consecutive games, consecutive buckets made within the same season, for him to go 1 for 7 over 2 games is pretty is pretty crazy. Like, yeah, he's not finishing. And nope. I think that was another thing with Kidd. Like, I wonder if it wasn't the back injury. Like, he missed, I remember one of the last plays he had on the floor before he got taken out. I didn't really see him again. He missed. He got free in a pick and roll for a layup and missed. And it wasn't even against Zubac. It was against
Zubac was against a smaller guy. I don't remember who was in front of him, but it was almost Paul George. And Paul George is a big guy, but it had no touch and like really went off the backboard hard. I mean, it's 0-for-3 from the floor. And, you know, kudos to Kidd really for just deciding that he didn't have it. Yeah. You know,
if he's not finishing in those situations, and yeah, even if it is Paul George, which I know that happened in game one, like, doesn't matter. Like, he's got to finish. Like, you can't have, if he's going over from the floor, like if he's missing shots and he's not being productive in the pick and roll, and then the other end of the floor, it doesn't seem like he's containing as well as he contained at the level of the screen or in the paint as he did in the regular season. Like, yeah, you got to make the switch. Lively's mobility seems like it's been a pretty good effective tool against the Clippers kind of star trio. And he's also, I think he's finishing better with his length. I think his length is allowing him to maybe get over the top a little bit better. But the thing with Lively is they weren't running that high post offense stuff with Lively. They were doing that with Gafford. So if Gafford's not on the floor, that takes away one of those counters we've been talking about that could maybe help. So if you're doing more Lively, you might have to try to think of something else. I think you need to run Kyrie off some more off ball stuff. Cause I think he's actually been shooting the ball pretty well.
Yeah.
In this series, well, I mean,
so. Three for sure. He's going to get some of these crazier shots that he takes to fall given enough time. I thought he got fouled a couple of times and just didn't get calls tonight. Gonzalo asking the chat, something is wrong with Lively too. And I think that's probably in reference to the lack of like pick and roll stuff with Luka and Lively. Honestly, my take is what's happening there is like the Clippers are one of these teams that are uniquely suited to guarding the Mavs pick and roll, because if Luka and Lively are diving down the lane, there's somebody on the weak side, usually a lengthier defender, that is able to both kind of bump Lively and provide help there on the alley-oop while also kind of teasing Luka into throwing the pass, the kick out to the far corner. And the Clippers have taken it away from Luka a couple of times in this series. It happened a lot the other night where Luka even like passed one directly to Zubac. They're just good at this. The Clippers are good. Yeah. They're good schematic, lengthy defensive team. And it's like, we get so used to watching Luka destroy people in the regular season where it's like, oh, well, something's wrong with the Mavericks offense. And I don't necessarily think that's the case as much as the Clippers are shutting them out and they don't have the proper counters, or they're not using those counters, or like you're sort of saying, they're not getting into the sort of things that could perhaps help exploit some of these myths, some of the weaknesses. I mean, the Clippers just really good. It's kind of what it comes down to.
That's the cheat code of having Paul George and Kawhi Leonard on your team, right? Like, you've got an elite wing defender that can play on the ball, and you've also got an elite help side defender that can crash down if your big is playing up and you need someone to cover that lob man or that dunker spot.
Mm-hmm.
Like, George has been doing that almost all series, these two games, being the help guy on these bigs. So that's difficult. And also they're just like, we're not giving you easy lobs. Like, they're like, Luka, you can shoot a floater. Like, we're not letting Derek Lively catch uncontested lobs. Like, they've kind of made that conscious decision that they're just not going to let Mavericks get these open lob dunks, and they're going to live with whatever the ball handler is doing and seeing if their defenders can get over the screen and get back into the play and contest. Cause I think they would rather Luka shoot a floater than they would rather let Lively catch a lob dunk.
Well, and Luka's not shooting that floater, and that's sort of driving me nuts, particularly when he's going down the middle of the lane. Tom Seldon asked, why did Luka barely drive to the basket in the first half? And like, that's a great question. And I don't really have an easy answer for this, because what I need, like, you saw that there at the end of the third quarter when Luka really put his head down and drove to the basket. He's not using near enough force, because I think he's just trying to feel out the game. Like, this is he's playing very oddly. I don't want to say he's playing badly, because I don't think that's fair, but I think what the Clippers are doing enough on defense is making him second guess elements of what he's really good at. and he's taking just a whole lot of mid-range shots. He's not getting into the middle. And so when Luka's threes aren't falling and he's having to go to sort of the Dirk style mid-range game, and if unless that's like, he's just not going to get there. Like, he doesn't have that speed. He doesn't also put his head down enough and go, because I don't think he really wants to take that kind of a beating the whole game. And that's not a criticism. It's just something where it's, you know, you play as physical as Luka does, you sort of have to pick and choose your spots. Otherwise, you're probably going to get crushed by the end of the game. Salam says the Clippers are not falling for the pump fakes. That's what I mean. Like, we're talking about how well the Clippers are doing defensively on the Mavericks, because they're just, you know, we've seen this for, you know, previous two playoff matchups. They're just very good at this sort of thing. And what, you know, I sort of wonder, there's likelihood is like there's just going to be a Luka game when he comes out and hits four of his first five threes, and that effectively breaks what the Clippers want to do the rest of the game. Because when you come out and you miss for like four of your first five, which I think he did, he definitely did in game one, and I think tonight he missed his first three, the Clippers just going to give that to you until you really make them pay.
Right. So, and then he made them pay in the clutch with that last one. So that's kind of how it works. Yeah. He was 2 of 6 in the paint outside of the restricted area. So like, yeah, he hasn't, you know, that floater range shot, which he's normally shooting like what, like 47, close to 50% on those shots. And now he's shooting under 50, like almost under 40. Like, that's a big deal, because that's what the Clippers are kind of giving him outside of the threes. So if he's not making threes, he's not making those shots in the paint, kind of is making it tough on him. You know, I just don't know where else he's going to get those shots, because he's getting to the rim at a career low rate, by the way, like in the regular season. So he's not going to live at the rim like he did in 2020. Like, he's just a different version of Luka and a different version of this Mavericks team, because it's hard for him to live at the rim, because – I mean, the Mavericks are playing like three non-shooters a lot of the time. So there's not a lot to go on. So,
I just think the offensive breakout will come, but it's going to come from the Mavericks actually connecting on shots in the first quarter.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
So, again, like, not – this is just looking at what they can do differently. I mean, obviously, that fourth quarter was huge. They scored 31 points.
Yeah, and they hit 42% of their threes with Luka going 5 of 14. So,
yeah.
That's they got the role players involved.
That's pretty amazing in and of itself. I mean, I think we're kind of close to wrapping up, and then I'll kick over to the secondary live show. I just sort of want to reiterate how cool I thought it was that PJ Washington rebounded from. I mean, he did not have a good, like, PJ Washington was having a horrible offensive game. Then he connects on two threes, which really helped seal the game. And then a pair of free throws. I mean, that was awesome. I was just really his sort of ability to shake off some of the funk that happens with his game is pretty impressive. I'm used to
15 points in the second half.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really something, man. That's really is pretty impressive.
And some of those misses, I was like, uh-oh. Like, he missed that alley-oop. Do you remember the alley-oop he missed layup that was like, just like, wait, why didn't you dunk it?
Like, that's one of those where I keep making the joke that he needs glasses. He was at the rim and he shot the ball that way. Like, he nearly airballed an oop layup. It was a riot. So bouncing back from those kind of fuck ups, a lot of guys don't do that. I mean, we watched. Like, it took Dorian like 3 years to really to shake off bad play and then just bust through it. And obviously these are different players, different skill sets, but it's just nice to watch. That's
all. And by the way, while he's recovering from that and having a really great offensive second half, he's, you know, Kawhi Leonard has 15 points on 17 shots. Like, James Harden has 22 points on 14 shots. Only 6 of 14 shooting. Like, he was everywhere. Like, his defense, that's what's been pretty remarkable about him. His offense does not swing his defense. And we've seen a lot of different Mavericks role players where it feels like they can only guard when they're making shots. And that doesn't seem to bother him, because he's definitely had some games where he's not making shots. But his defense, like, his defense is so steady from opening tip to the end of the game.
I'm a big fan. Okay, nearly 1 a.m. I think I'm going to kick over to the secondary live show. Those of you who are in here hanging out, I'm going to let Josh go do something else for the night. Probably do some editing. And then those of you who want to come talk basketball with me, we'll stay up maybe for another hour here. I mean, I'm awake. I don't want to be awake, but I'm kind of like the post-adrenaline rush. Just not like I'd be able to sleep anyways. So we got 2 days until the Friday game. Maybe you and I will hop back in here. Maybe I'll try to see if anybody else out there in NBA world wants to talk a little basketball with me. But I'll be right back, and we will do our secondary live show. Those of you listening on the audio stream, look for the Mavs party to be posted to your feed at some point on Wednesday afternoon. Thanks so much for hanging out, Josh. We will talk soon, and go Mavs.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.